She had wanted to call him as soon as it happened. Her cell phone had been in her hands, his number up on the screen, but she had tucked the phone into her purse because Sarah knew if she saw Will before she was ready, she would shatter like a delicate piece of china. Amanda Wagner knocked as she entered the room.
"I hate to interrupt, Dr. Linton, but could we have a word with you?"
Anger flashed across Will's face. "She doesn't..." "It's all right," Sarah interrupted. "There's not much that I can tell you." Amanda smiled, as if this was some sort of social gathering.
"Anything at all would be appreciated."
Sarah had talked about it so much over the last few hours that she recited the events as if by rote. She gave them the abbreviated version of her statement, not going into a detailed description of the female junkie, which, on paper, had sounded like every junkie Sarah had ever seen. Nor did she describe the trash around the dumpster or the EMTs or list the procedure she followed. She cut to what mattered. The young man who'd peered at her from behind the curtain. He had punched her in the chest. He had shot her patient twice in the head. He was thin, Caucasian, mid to late 20s, and wearing a black warm-up jacket and baseball cap. In the short time that elapsed between her first sight of him and his death, he had not uttered one word. The only sound she'd heard was a grunt, and then the air whistling from his neck as his breath seeped out. She finished. His hand was gripped around my hand. I couldn't stop it. He's dead. They're both dead. Will seemed to have trouble speaking.
He hurt you.
Sarah could only nod, but her mind conjured the image she had seen in the bathroom mirror, an oblong, ugly bruise over her right breast where the man had punched her. Will cleared his throat.
All right. Thank you for your cooperation, Dr. Linton. I know you probably want to get home.
He turned to leave, but Amanda made no move to follow.
Dr. Linton, I noticed a soda machine in the waiting room. Would you like something to drink?
Sarah was taken off guard.
Will, could you get a diet Sprite for me? And I'm sorry, Dr. Linton, what did you want?
Will's jaw tightened like a ratchet. He wasn't stupid. He knew that Amanda was trying to get her alone, just like Sarah knew that Amanda wouldn't give up until she got what she wanted. She tried to make this easier for Will, saying, "A Coke would be nice." He didn't give in that easy.
"Are you sure?"
"Yes, I'm sure." He wasn't happy, but he left the room. Amanda checked the hallway, making sure Will was gone. She turned back to Sarah.
"I'm rooting for you, you know."
Sarah didn't have a clue what she was talking about.
"Will," she explained. "He's got one too many bitches in his life, and I'm not going anywhere."
Sarah was in no mood to joke. "What do you want, Amanda?" She got to the point.
"The bodies are still downstairs in the morgue. I need you to examine them and give me your professional opinion."
She added,
"A coroner's opinion."
Sarah felt a cold chill at the thought of seeing the man again. Every time she blinked, she could see his expressionless face hovering over her. She couldn't grip her hand without feeling his fingers wrapped around her own. "I can't cut them open."
"No, but you can answer some questions for me."
"Such as?"
"Drug use, gang affiliations, and whether or not one of them has a stomach full of heroin."
"Like Ricardo?"
"Yes, like Ricardo."
Sarah didn't give herself time to think about the request. "All right, I'll do it."
"Do what?"
Will was back. He must have run the entire way. He was out of breath again. He held two sodas in one hand.
"There you are,"
Amanda said, as if she was surprised to see him.
"We were about to go down to the morgue."
Will looked at Sarah.
"No."
"I want to do this," Sarah insisted, though she was not sure why. For the last 3 hours, all she could think about was going home. Now that Will was here, the thought of returning to her empty apartment was unimaginable.
"We don't need these."
Amanda took the soda cans and dropped them into the trash.
Dr. Linton.
Sarah led them down the corridor toward the elevators, feeling like a lifetime had passed since she'd made the same walk this morning. A loaded gurney rolled by, EMT shouting stats, doctors giving orders. Sarah held out her arm, guiding Will back against the wall so that the patient could get past. Her hand hovered just in front of his tie. She could feel the silk material sway against her fingertips. He was wearing a suit, his normal work attire, but without the usual vest. His jacket was dark blue, the shirt a lighter shade of the same color. The cop. Sarah had forgotten the cop.
I didn't...
Hold that thought,
Amanda said as if she was afraid the walls had ears. Sarah fumed at herself as they waited for the elevator. How had she forgotten about the cop? What was wrong with her? The doors opened. The elevator was packed. It took an interminable amount of time for the old pulleys and lifts to groan into action. They went down a floor, and most of the people exited. Two young orderlies rode with them to the sub-basement. They got off and headed toward the stairwell, probably for an illicit tryst. Amanda waited until they were well beyond earshot.
What is it?
There was a man when we came in from the dumpster. I nearly ran him over. I told him to get out of the way, and he flashed a badge. It looked like a badge. I'm not sure anymore. He acted like a cop.
In what way?
He acted like he had every right to question me, and he was irritated when I didn't answer immediately. Sarah gave her a meaningful look.
Sounds like a cop to me,
Amanda wryly admitted.
What did he want?
To know whether or not the patient was going to make it. I told him maybe, even though it was obvious. Sarah let her voice trail off, willing herself to remember. He was wearing a dark suit, charcoal, white shirt. He was very thin, almost gaunt. He reeked of cigarette smoke. I could smell it even after he left.
Did you see which way he went?
She shook her head.
White, black?
White, gray hair. He was older. He looked older. She put her hand to her face. His cheeks were sunken. His eyes were heavily lidded. She remembered something else. He was wearing a hat, a baseball hat.
Black? Will asked.
Blue, she said. Atlanta Braves.
We'll probably get some nice images of the top of it from the security cameras,
Amanda commented.
We'll have to share this information with the APD. They may want to see if you can work with a sketch artist.
Sarah would do whatever it took. I'm sorry, I didn't remember earlier. I don't know what...
You were in shock.
Will seemed ready to say more. He glanced at Amanda, then indicated the double doors at the other end of the hallway. He said, I think it's this way. In the morgue, Junior and Larry were nowhere to be seen. Instead, there were two gurneys, each with a body, each with a white sheet covering the dead. Sarah assumed one was the man she had found outside by the dumpster, and the other was the man who had shot the first, then tried to kill her. There was an older woman leaning against the door to the walk-in freezer. She looked up from her BlackBerry as they walked into the room. Her hospital badge was tucked into her pants pocket. No white lab coat, just a well-tailored black pantsuit. She was clearly on the administration side of the hospital. She was older, more gray than black in her hair. She pushed away from the freezer and walked over. Her posture was ramrod straight, her sizable chest out in front of her like the prow of a ship. She didn't stop for introductions. She pulled a small spiral-bound notebook out of her jacket pocket and read, "The shooter's name is Franklin Warren Heaney. APD found his wallet on him. Local boy, lives in Tucker with his parents. Dropped out of Perimeter College his sophomore year. No employment records. No adult arrest history, but at 13 he spent 6 months in juvie for breaking windows. He has one child, a daughter, 6 years old, who lives with an aunt out in Snellville. The baby mama is in county lockup for shoplifting and a baggie of meth they found in her purse. That's all I could get on him." She indicated the other body. Marcellus Benedict Estevez. As I said on the phone, his wallet was found in the trash by the dumpster. I assume you've already looked into him? Amanda nodded, and the woman closed her notebook.
That's all I have for now. Nothing else has come down on the wire.
Amanda nodded again.
Thank you. I bought you an hour before the body boys come. Dr. Linton, the films you ordered for Estevez are in the transport packet. I've gathered together some tools that might be useful. I'm sorry it can't be more.
She had done plenty. Sarah looked over the four mayo trays laid out beside the bodies. Whoever the woman was, she had some medical knowledge and was high enough up the Grady food chain to raid the supply closet without setting off alarms.
Thank you.
The woman nodded her goodbyes, then left the room.
Will's tone was sharp when he asked Amanda, "Let me guess, one of your old gals?"
Amanda ignored him.
"Dr. Linton, if we could get started."
Sarah had to force herself to move, or she would have just stood rooted to the floor until the building fell down around her. There was a pack of sterile gloves hanging from a cleat on the wall. She took out a pair and forced them over her sweating hands. The powder rolled into tiny balls that stuck to her palm like dough. Without preamble, she pulled back the sheet covering the first body, revealing Marcellus Estevez, the man she had found by the dumpster. He had two closely spaced bullet holes in his forehead. Powder burns tattooed the skin. She smelled cordite, which was impossible considering the man had been shot hours ago.
Amanda said, "Two rounds to the center of the forehead, just like our drive-by at the warehouse."
Will's voice was low. "You don't have to do this."
"I'm fine."
Sarah forced herself to get on with it, starting with the easy stuff.
"He's approximately 25 years of age," she mumbled. 5'8" or 5'9", around 180 pounds.
She pressed open his eyes, feeling herself fall into the routine of examination.
"Brown, jaundiced.
His wound was septic. Necropsy will probably show infiltration into the larger organs. He was in systemic shutdown when we found him." She rolled down the sheet so she could look at the belly again, this time with an eye toward forensic evaluation rather than treatment. The man was nude. His clothes had been cut off when they'd brought him into the ER. Sarah could clearly see the penetrating stab wound in the lower left quadrant of his abdomen. She pressed on either side of the cut to see if she could discern the path of the blade. The small intestines were pierced. It looks like the knife went in at an upward angle, right-handed thrust from a supine position.
Amanda asked, "He was on top of her?"
"I would assume. We're talking about Evelyn here, right?" Will was still being stoic, but Amanda nodded. The blade entered at an oblique angle to the abdominal Langer's lines, or the natural direction of the skin. "If I reorient the edges like this..." She twisted the skin into the position it had been in when the man was stabbed. "You can see the point of penetration suggests Evelyn was on her back, most likely on the floor, with her attacker on top of her. He was slightly bent at the waist. The knife went in like this." Sarah reached for a scalpel on the tray, but changed her mind and grabbed a pair of scissors instead. She illustrated the action, holding her hand down at her hip with the scissors angled upward. It was more defensive than deliberate. Maybe they struggled and fell at the same time. The knife went in. The man rolled over while the blade was still lodged. You can see how the wound is incised significantly more at the lateral edge, indicating movement.
"Get your knife?"
Amanda asked. "Statistically, it's the most likely weapon, and the struggle took place in the kitchen, so it makes sense. They'll have to do a comparison at the ME's office to be sure. Did they find the weapon at the scene?"
"Yes," she answered. "Are you sure about this? She was on her back?"
Sarah could see that Amanda was not pleased with the evaluation. She wanted her friend to be a fighter, not someone who got lucky. "The majority of fatal stab wounds are in the left chest region. If you want to kill someone, you go for the heart, overhanded, straight into the chest." This was defensive. She indicated the man's sliced palm. But Evelyn didn't go easily. At some point, she must have come at him directly because he grabbed the blade of the knife. Amanda seemed only slightly placated by this information.
"Is there anything in his stomach?"
Sarah reached under the gurney and pulled out the transportation packet destined for the Fulton County Medical Examiner. Krakauer had filled in most of the information while Sarah was being interviewed by the police. The form was standard. The M.E. performing the autopsy needed to know drugs on board, procedures followed, which marks came from the hospital, and which had more nefarious origins. Sarah found a thermal reproduction of the X-rays on the last page. She said, "The belly looks clear of any foreign objects. They'll know for sure when they cut them open, but I'm assuming that the amount of heroin we're talking about, something worth dying for, would be easy to spot." Will cleared his throat. He seemed reluctant as he asked, "Would Evelyn have a lot of blood on her from stabbing this guy?" "It's not likely. Most of the bleeding happened inside the belly, even after the knife was pulled out. There's the defensive wound on his hand, but the ulnar and the radial arteries are intact and none of the digital arteries were compromised. If the cut on his hand was deeper or if one of the fingers was sliced open or off, you could expect a significant amount of blood loss. But that's not the case with Estevez, so I'm guessing Evelyn would have had a minimal amount of blood on her clothes." Will said, "There was a lot of blood on the floor. You could see footprints back and forth across the tiles."
"How big was the space?"
"Kitchen-sized," he said. "Bigger than yours, but not by much. And enclosed. The house is older, ranch style."
Sarah thought about it. "I'd have to see the crime scene photos, but I'm fairly certain that if there was enough blood on the floor to show a struggle, that blood didn't come from Estevez's hand or belly. At least, not all of it."
"Could Estevez just get up on his own and walk off after sustaining his injuries?"
"Not without help.
Any type of damage to the abdominal wall makes it difficult to breathe, let alone move."
Sarah put her hand to her stomach.
"Think about how many muscles have to fire just to sit up." Amanda asked Will, "What are you getting at?"
"I'm just wondering who struggled with Evelyn if this guy couldn't get up after being stabbed and there wasn't a lot of blood from his wound."
Sarah followed his logic. "You think Evelyn was injured?"
"Maybe.
They did blood typing on scene, but they didn't look at all of it. And DNA won't be back for another few days."
He shrugged.
"If Evelyn was hurt and Estevez didn't bleed much, that could explain the extra blood."
"I'm sure if she's injured, it's nothing serious."
Amanda waved away Will's theory as if swatting a fly.
Any logical person would have already accepted the very real possibility that Evelyn Mitchell's chances of survival were very slim considering how much time had elapsed. Amanda seemed to be holding on to the opposite theory. Sarah wasn't going to be the one to tell her otherwise. There was a large magnifying glass on one of the trays. Sarah pulled down the overhead light and went back to the examination, checking the dead man head to toe for trace evidence, needle marks, anything unusual that might lead them to a clue. When it was time to roll him over, Will put on a pair of surgical gloves and helped flip the body.
"Well, that's interesting,"
Amanda said with her usual flair for understatement. Estevez had a large tattoo of an angel on his back. The image covered the width of his shoulders and reached the bottom of his sacrum, and was so intricate that it more closely resembled a carving.
"Gabriel," Sarah said. "The archangel."
Will asked,
"How do you know that?"
She pointed to the horn in the angel's mouth. "There's no biblical foundation, but some religions believe that judgment day comes when Gabriel blows his horn." Sarah knew that Will had never been to church.
"It's the sort of thing they teach kids in Sunday school. And it tracks with his name, Marcellus Benedict. I believe those are the names of two different popes."
Amanda asked,
"How recently would you say this tattoo was worked on?"
The skin at the small of his back was still irritated from the needle.
"A week? Maybe 5 days?"
She leaned in closer to look at the scrollwork. "This was done in stages. Whoever did this took a long time. Probably months. It's not the kind of thing you'd forget, and I imagine it'd be very expensive."
Will held the dead man's hand in his.
"Did you see this under the fingernails?"
"I saw they're dirty," she admitted. "That's fairly typical for a man this age. I can't do any scrapings. The ME's office would have a fit, and anything I found would be inadmissible because we haven't established the chain of evidence."
Will put his nose close to the man's fingers.
Smells like oil to me.
Sarah smelled for herself.
I can't tell.
The police told me that they checked the outside security cameras. They're not static, they sweep back and forth across the back lot, which the bad guys obviously knew because they managed not to get caught leaving the body. The timestamp says that Estevez was by the dumpster at least 12 hours. The smell could be anything. She rolled over the hand to show Will. This is more interesting. Estevez obviously worked with his hands. There's a hardening of the skin on the ball of the thumb, and here on the side of the index finger. He held some kind of tool for long periods of time. It would have had some weight to it and moved around a bit. He asked Amanda,
"You said he was unemployed?" "The state shows he's been collecting unemployment insurance for almost a year."
Sarah thought of something else. "Can you hand me that?" She pointed to the magnifying glass. Will picked it up and waited as Sarah forced open Estevez's mouth. The jaw was stiff. The tendon popped when she pried open the lips. "Hold it here," she told Will, indicating he should focus on the upper teeth. "Do you see these tiny indentations in the bottom edges of his top front teeth?" Will leaned in closer, then let Amanda take a look. "These are repetitive impressions. They come from constantly gripping something between his teeth. You see this sort of thing with seamstresses who bite thread or Finnish carpenters who put nails in their mouth?"
"Or cabinet makers?" Will asked.
"That's possible." Sarah looked at Estevez's hand again. "These calluses could come from holding a nail gun. I'd have to see the tool for comparison, but if you told me he worked as a carpenter, I'd agree that his hands show signs of working in that industry." She picked up the man's left hand. "Do you see these scars on his index finger? These line up with common injuries for carpenters. Hammers slip, a nail pinches the skin, threads from screws scrape off the top dermal layer. Do you see the scar down the center line of his nail?" Will nodded. "It cuts through his cuticle, too. Carpenters use carpet knives to cut edges or score wood. Sometimes the blade skips down the fingernail or shaves the skin off the side of the finger. A lot of times they'll use their non-dominant hand to smooth out putty or caulk, which causes wearing at the tip. His fingerprints would be different week to week, sometimes day to day." Amanda said,
"So he's been at this job for a while?"
"I'd say whatever job he's been working at that caused these marks has been going on for 2 to 3 years.
"What about Heaney, the shooter?"
Sarah reached under the sheet to check the other man's hands. She did not want to look at his face again. "He was left-handed, but I would hazard he worked in the same industry as Estevez." Will said,
"There's one connection, at least. They both worked for Ling Ling."
Sarah asked, "Who's Ling Ling?"
"A missing person of interest." Amanda checked her watch. "We should hurry this along, Dr. Linton. Can you examine our other friend here?"
Sarah didn't give herself time to think about it. She pulled back the sheet in one quick motion. It was the first time she'd looked at Franklin Warren Heaney's face since he'd tried to kill her. His eyes were open. His lips were wrapped around the tube that had been inserted into his throat to help him breathe. A crusty layer of blood circled his neck where the flesh gaped open. He was still dressed from the waist down, but his jacket and shirt had been cut open so that the ER staff could try to save his life. The exercise had been perfunctory. The man had sliced open his own jugular. He'd lost nearly half his blood volume before they'd managed to pick him up off the floor and put him on the table. Sarah knew this because she had been the doctor working on him. She looked up. Both Amanda and Will were staring at her. "Sorry," she apologized. She had to clear her throat before she could talk again. "He's around the same age as Estevez, mid to late 20s, underweight for his build." She pointed to the needle tracks on his arm. The IV port she'd inserted was still taped to his skin. "Recent user, at least intravenously." She found an otoscope and checked inside the man's nose. "There's significant scarring in the nasal passages, probably from snorting powder." She shoved the scope in farther. "He's had surgery to repair the septum, so you're looking at coke or meth, maybe oxy. They're all extremely corrosive to cartilage."
Will asked, "What about heroin?"
"Oh, heroin, of course."
Sarah apologized again.
"Sorry, most of the heroin users I see are smokers or needle junkies. The snorters usually go straight to the morgue."
Amanda crossed her arms.
"What about his stomach?"
Sarah didn't have to check the file. No x-rays had been taken. The man had expired before any tests could be ordered. Instead of continuing the exam, Sarah found herself looking at his face again. Franklin Heaney hardly resembled a choir boy, with the acne-scarred skin and sunken cheeks were recognizable to someone out in the world. He had a mother. He had a father, a child, perhaps a sister or brother, who right at this moment was probably hearing that their loved one was dead. Their loved one, who had killed a man in cold blood and punched Sarah so violently that the breath had gone out of her body. She felt the bruise on her chest start to throb at the memory. She had a mother, too. A sister. A father. All of whom would be horrified if they heard what had happened to Sarah today. Amanda asked,
"Dr. Linton?"
"Sorry." In the time it took to walk over to the box of gloves and put on a fresh pair, she had managed to pull herself back together. She ignored Will's look of concern and pressed her fingers into the dead man's belly. "I don't feel anything unusual. The organs are in their proper position and are normal size. No swelling or compaction in the bowel or stomach." She snapped off the gloves and threw them into the trash. The water in the sink was cold, but Sarah washed her hands anyway. "I can't send him to x-ray because they'll need a patient ID, and frankly, I'm not going to make a living person wait to satisfy a curiosity. The ME's office will have to give you a definitive answer." She squirted antibacterial gel into her palm, fighting to keep her voice steady. "Is that all?"
"Yes,"
Amanda said.
"Thank you, Dr. Linton."
Sarah didn't acknowledge the answer. She ignored Will. She ignored the two bodies. She kept her eyes on the door until she passed through it. In the hallway, she concentrated on the elevator, the buttons she would press, the numbers that would light up over the door. She only wanted to think about the steps ahead, not the ones behind her. She had to get out of this place, to get home and wrap herself in a blanket on the couch and pull the dogs around her and forget this miserable day. There were footsteps behind her. Will was running again. He caught up with her quickly. She turned around. He stopped a few feet away. He said,
"Amanda's putting out an APB on the tattoo."
Why was he just standing there? Why did he keep rushing up to her and doing absolutely nothing?
He said, "Maybe we'll find..."
"I really don't care." He stared at her. His hands were in his pockets. The sleeve of his jacket was tight around his upper arm. There was a small tear in the material. Sarah leaned her shoulder against the wall. She hadn't noticed before, but there was a fresh cut at the top of his earlobe. She wanted to ask him about it, but he would probably tell her that he'd cut himself shaving. Maybe she didn't want to know what had happened. The Polaroid of his damaged mouth still burned in her memory. What else had they done to him? What else had he done to himself? Will said, "Why is it that none of the women in my life call me when they need help?"
"Doesn't Angie call you?"
He looked down at the floor, the space between them. She said, "I'm sorry. That wasn't fair. It's been a really long day." Will didn't look up. Instead, he took her hand. His fingers laced through hers. His skin was warm, almost hot. He traced his thumb along the inside of her palm, the webbing between her fingers. Sarah closed her eyes as he slowly explored every inch of her hand, caressing the lines and indentations, pressing his thumb gently against the pulse beating in her wrist. His touch was palliative. She felt her body starting to relax. Her breathing took on an easy cadence that matched his. The doors to the morgue swished open. Sarah yanked away her hand at the same time as Will. Neither of them looked at each other. They were like two kids caught in the back of a parked car. Amanda held her cell phone in the air, triumphant.
Roger Ling wants to talk.
Chapter 12. Faith felt as close to a nervous breakdown as she'd ever been in her life. Her teeth kept chattering despite the sweat dripping down her body. She'd thrown up her breakfast and had to force down lunch. Her head ached so badly that it hurt to even close her eyes. Her blood sugar levels were just as fragile. She'd had to call her doctor's office to find out what to do. They had threatened to put her in the hospital if she didn't get her numbers under control. Faith had promised to report back, then she'd gone into the bathroom, turned on the shower as hot as she could stand it, and sobbed for half an hour. The same series of thoughts kept running through her mind like tires wearing a groove in a gravel road. They had been in her house. They had touched her things. Touched Jeremy's things. They knew when he was born. They knew his schools, they knew his likes and dislikes. They had planned this, all of it, down to the last detail. The threat was like a death sentence. Mouth shut, eyes open. Faith didn't think her eyes could open any wider or her mouth could close any tighter. She'd searched the house twice. She was constantly checking her phone, her email, Jeremy's Facebook page. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. She had been trapped in the house like a caged animal for nearly 10 hours. And still nothing. "Hey, Mom." Jeremy came into the kitchen. Faith was sitting at the table, staring at the backyard, where Detective Taylor and Ginger were talking earnestly to the ground. She could tell from their bored demeanors that they were just waiting for the word from their boss so they could get back to their real jobs. As far as they were concerned, this case had come to a screeching halt. Too many hours had passed. No one had made contact. She could read the truth in their eyes. They honestly believed that Evelyn Mitchell was dead. "Mom?" Faith rubbed Jeremy's arm. "What is it? Is Emma up?" The baby had slept too long last night. She was fussy and irritable and had screamed for nearly a full hour before finally relenting to her afternoon nap. "She's fine," Jeremy answered. "I was going to go for a walk, get out of the house for a minute, take some fresh air." "No," she told him. "I don't want you leaving the house." His expression told her how hard her voice was. She squeezed his arm. "I want you to stay here, all right? I'm tired of being cooped up inside." "So am I, but I want you to promise me you won't leave the house." She played at his emotions. "I've already got Grandma to worry about. Don't make me add you to my list." His reluctance was obvious, but he told her, "All right. Just do something with your Uncle Zeke. Play cards or something. He pouts when he loses." "So do you." Faith shooed him out of the kitchen. She charted his path through the house and up to his room by the familiar squeaks in the floorboards and on the stairs. She should put Zeke to work on her list of handyman repairs. Of course, that would involve actually talking to him, and Faith was doing her best to avoid her brother. Miraculously, he seemed to be doing the same. He'd been in the garage for the last 3 hours working on his laptop. Faith pushed herself up from the table and started pacing in hopes that she could work out some of her nervous energy. That didn't last long. She leaned over the table and tapped the keyboard on her laptop to wake it up. She moused up to reload Jeremy's Facebook page. The rainbow wheel started to spin. Jeremy was probably playing some game upstairs that was slowing down the wireless network. The phone rang. Faith jumped. She startled any time there was an unexpected noise. She was as nervous as a cat. The back door slid open. Ginger waited while she took the receiver off the hook. She could tell from his tired expression that he felt this was not only perfunctory, but beneath his talents. She put the phone to her ear. "Hello?" "Faith." It was Victor Martinez. She waved away Ginger. "Hey."
"Hi."
Now that the easy part was out of the way, neither of them seemed capable of talking. She hadn't spoken to Victor in 13 months, not since she'd sent him a text that he needed to get his stuff out of her house or she was going to leave it on the street. Victor broke the silence.
Is there any news on your mother?
No, nothing.
It's been over 24 hours, right?
She didn't trust herself to speak. Victor had a habit of pointing out the obvious, and his love of crime shows meant that he knew as well as Faith that time was against them.
Is Jeremy all right?
Yes. Thank you for bringing him home yesterday and staying with him. She thought to ask, you didn't see anything unusual when you were here, right? No one hanging around the house?
Of course not. I would have told the police.
How long were you here before they arrived?
Not long. Your brother came about an hour later and I left.
Faith's exhausted brain struggled to do the math. Evelyn's kidnappers hadn't hesitated. They'd driven straight here from her house. They were familiar enough with the space to walk right upstairs to her room and plant the finger under Faith's pillow. Maybe they were watching the house even before that. Maybe they had listened to Faith's phone calls or checked her calendar on her laptop and knew that she would be away. Nothing in the house was password protected because she had always assumed that she was safe here. Faith had missed something Victor said.
What? I said, your brother's kind of an asshole.
Faith snapped. It's not exactly an easy time for him, Victor. Our mother is missing. God knows whether she's dead or alive. Zeke dropped everything to be with Jeremy. I'm sorry if you thought he was rude. It's kind of hard to be friendly right now.
Hold on, all right? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
Her breathing was revved up again. Faith tried to get her control back. She wanted to yell at someone. That person probably didn't need to be Victor.
Are you there? He asked.
Faith couldn't drag this out any longer. I know that Jeremy showed you Emma's picture. He cleared his throat. What you're thinking about her? Faith pressed her fingers to her closed eyelids. You're right. He was silent for what felt like an eternity. Finally, he said, she's beautiful. Faith dropped her hand. She looked up at the ceiling. Her hormones were so out of whack that the stupidest thing could set her off. She cradled the phone against her shoulder and tried to reload Jeremy's Facebook page again. I'd like to meet her when this is all over. Faith watched the wheel spin on the computer screen as the processor worked. She couldn't think about seeing Victor with Emma, holding her in his arms, stroking her hair, pointing out that looking into her light brown eyes was like looking into a mirror. Faith could only think about right now, and how every second that ticked by made it less likely that Evelyn Mitchell would see her granddaughter's first birthday.
Your mom's a fighter, Victor said. Then almost ruefully, just like you.
The page finally loaded. Goodnight 92 had posted a comment 8 minutes ago. I have to go. Faith hung up the phone. Her hand hovered over the laptop. She stared at the words on the screen. They had a familiar ring. You must be feeling cooped up. Why don't you get out of the house and take some fresh air? They had contacted Jeremy again. And her son, her little boy, had been ready to walk out the front door and put his life on the line so that he could get his grandmother back. She raised her voice, calling, Jeremy? Faith waited. There were no footsteps overhead, no squeaks on the stairs or floorboards. Jeremy? She called again, going into the living room. An eternity passed. Faith grabbed the back of the couch so she wouldn't fall down. Her voice trilled in panic. Jeremy? Her heart stopped at the thumping sound from upstairs. Heavy footsteps across the floor. But it was Zeke who called from the top of the landing.
Jesus, Faith, what's wrong?
Faith could barely speak. Where's Jeremy?
I told him he could go for a walk.
Ginger came in from the kitchen, a puzzled look on his face. Before he could say anything, Faith grabbed the gun out of a shoulder holster and bolted from the room. She didn't remember opening the front door or running down the driveway. It wasn't until she was in the middle of the street that Faith stopped. She saw a figure up ahead. He was about to turn the corner onto the next street. Tall, lanky, baggy jeans and a yellow Georgia Tech sweatshirt. Jeremy! She yelled. A car pulled up to the intersection, stopping a few feet from her son. Jeremy! He didn't hear her. He walked toward the car. Faith ran all out,
arms pumping, bare feet pounding the pavement. She gripped the gun so tightly in her hand that it felt like part of her skin.
Jeremy!
She screamed. He turned around. The car was in front of him, dark gray, four doors, new model Ford Focus with chrome trim. The window rolled down. Jeremy turned back to the car, bent down to look inside.
Stop!
Faith yelled, her throat clenching around the word.
Get away from the car! Get away from the car!
The driver was leaning toward Jeremy. Faith saw a teenage girl behind the wheel, mouth agape, obviously terrified by the armed madwoman running down the street. The car screeched off as Faith reached her son. She bumped into him, almost pushing him down.
Why?
She asked, gripping his arm so tight that her fingers hurt. He pulled away, rubbing his arm.
Jesus, Mom! What is wrong with you? She was lost. She needed directions.
Faith was dizzy from fear and adrenaline. She bent over and put her hand on her knee. The gun was at her side. So was Ginger. He snatched the weapon back.
Agent Mitchell, that was not cool.
His words filled her with anger.
Not cool?
She thumped her open palm against his chest.
Not cool? Agent?
His tone of voice implied she was acting hysterical, which only served to amp up her fury another notch.
How about letting my son walk out the door when you were assigned to watch him? Was that not cool, too?
She pushed him again.
How about you and your partner standing around holding your dicks while my boy is gone?
Another push.
Is that cool?
Ginger held up his hands in surrender.
Faith,
Zeke said. She hadn't noticed her brother standing there, maybe because, for once, he wasn't making things worse.
Let's just go back to the house.
She held out her hand to Jeremy, palm up.
iPhone.
He looked appalled.
What? Now,
she ordered.
That's got all my games on it.
I don't care.
What am I supposed to do? Read a book!
She screamed, her voice screeching.
Just stay offline, do you hear me? No internet.
Jesus. He glanced around for support, but Faith didn't care if God himself came down and told her to give the kid a break. She said, I'll tie you to my waist with a rope if I have to. He knew she wasn't bluffing. She'd done it before.
This isn't fair.
He slapped the phone in her hand. She would have thrown it to the ground and crushed it with her foot if the damn thing hadn't cost so much.
No internet,
Faith repeated.
No phone calls, no communication of any kind, and you stay in the fucking house, do you hear me?
He walked toward the house, giving her his back. Faith wasn't going to let him off that easy.
Do you hear me? I heard you,
he yelled.
God!
Ginger shoved his gun back into the holster, adjusting the straps like a haughty cheerleader. He followed Jeremy down the street. Faith limped along after them. Her feet were bruised from the rocky asphalt. Zeke fell in beside her. His shoulder brushed against hers. Faith braced herself for some kind of tirade, but he was mercifully silent as they walked up the driveway and entered the house. Faith threw Jeremy's iPhone onto the kitchen table. No wonder he wanted to leave. The space was beginning to feel like a prison. She leaned heavily against the chair. What had she been thinking? How could any of them be safe here? Evelyn's kidnappers knew the layout of the house. They had obviously targeted Jeremy. Anyone could have been in that car. They could have rolled down the window, pointed a gun at Jeremy's head, and pulled the trigger. He could have bled out in the middle of the street, and Faith wouldn't have known until his stupid Facebook page loaded that something was wrong.
Faith.
Zeke was standing in the middle of the kitchen. His tone indicated this wasn't the first time he'd said her name.
What's wrong with you?
Faith crossed her arms low on her stomach.
Where have you been staying?
You weren't sleeping at Mom's. I would have seen your stuff.
Dobbins.
She should have known. Zeke had always loved the soulless anonymity of base housing, even if Dobbins Air Reserve was an hour drive from the VA hospital where he was doing his in-service. I need you to do me a favor.
He was instantly skeptical. What?
I want you to take Jeremy and Emma back to the base with you. Today. Right now.
The Atlanta police couldn't protect her family, but the United States Air Force could.
I don't know how long it'll be for. I just need you to keep them on the base. Don't let them off until I tell you.
Why?
Because I need to know that they're safe.
Safe from what? What are you planning?
Faith checked the backyard to make sure the detectives weren't listening.
Ginger stared at her, his jaw rigid.
She turned her back to him. I need you to trust me.
Zeke snorted a laugh. Why would I start doing that?
Because I know what I'm doing, Zeke. I'm a police officer. I was trained to do this kind of thing.
What kind of thing? Run into the street barefooted like you're escaping from the loony bin?
I'm going to get Mom back, Zeke. I don't care if it kills me. I'm going to get her back.
You and what army?
He scoffed.
You gonna call in Aunt Mandy and go smear lipstick all over them?
She punched him in the face. He looked more shocked than hurt. Her knuckle felt like it might be broken. Still, she got some satisfaction when she saw a thin line of blood drip onto his upper lip.
Christ, he muttered. What the hell was that for?
You'll need to take my car. You can't fit a car seat in the Corvette. I can give you some money for gas and groceries, and I...
Wait.
His voice was muffled by his hand as he felt the bridge of his nose for damage. He looked at her. Really looked at her for the first time since she'd walked through her own front door. Faith had hit her brother before. She'd burned him with a match. She'd beaten him with a clothes hanger. To her recollection, this was the first time any violence between them actually seemed to work.
All right.
He used the toaster to check his reflection. His nose wasn't broken, but a deep purple bruise was working its way underneath his eye.
But I'm not taking your mini. I'm going to look retarded enough as it is.
Chapter 13. Will had never been quick to anger, but once he got there, he held onto it like a miser with a pot of gold. He didn't throw things or use his fists. He didn't rage or even raise his voice. Actually, the opposite happened. He went quiet. Completely silent. It was as if his vocal cords were paralyzed. He kept it all on the inside because in his vast experience with angry people, Will knew that letting it out meant that someone could end up very badly hurt. Not that this particular expression of anger didn't have its drawbacks. His stubborn silence had gotten him suspended from school on more than one occasion. Years ago, Amanda had transferred him to the nether regions of the North Georgia Mountains for his refusal to respond to her questions. Once, he'd stopped speaking to Angie for 3 whole days for fear of saying things to her that could never be taken back. They'd lived together, slept together, dined together, done everything together. And he hadn't uttered one word to her for a full 72 hours. If there had been a category in the Special Olympics for functionally illiterate mutes, Will would have had no problem cinching the gold. This was all to say that not speaking to Amanda during the 5-hour drive down to Coastal State Prison was nothing in the scheme of things. The worrying part was that the intensity of Will's anger would not dissipate. He had never hated another human being as much as he did when Amanda told him that, by the way, Sarah had almost been murdered. And that hatred would not go away. He kept waiting to feel that click of it letting up, the pot going from a boil to a simmer. But it wouldn't come. Even now, as Amanda paced back and forth in front of him, going from one end of the empty visitor's waiting room to the other, like a duck in a shooting gallery, he felt the rage burning inside him. The worst part was that he wanted to speak. He yearned to speak. He wanted to lay it all out for her and watch her face crumble as she realized that Will truly and irrevocably despised her for what she had done to him. He had never been a petty man, but he really, really wanted to hurt her. Amanda stopped pacing. She put her hands on her hips.
I don't know what you've been told, but sulking is not an attractive trait in a man.
Will stared at the floor. Grooves had been worn into the linoleum by the women and children who had whiled away their weekends waiting to visit the men inside the cells.
She said, as a rule, I only let someone call me that word once. I think you picked an appropriate time.
So he hadn't been completely mute. When Amanda had told him about Sarah, he'd called her the word that rhymes with her name, and not in Spanish.
What do you want, Will? An apology?
She huffed a laugh.
All right. I'm sorry. I apologize for not letting you get distracted so that you could do your job. I apologize for making sure your head didn't get blown off. I apologize.
His mouth moved of its own accord.
Could you just shut up? What was that?
He didn't repeat himself. He didn't care whether or not she heard him, or if his job was in jeopardy, or if she was going to unleash a new kind of hell on him for standing up to her. Will could not remember the last time he had experienced the kind of agony he'd suffered this afternoon. They'd sat outside that damn warehouse for a full hour before the Doraville police released them. Will understood intellectually why the detectives wanted to talk to them. There were two dead bodies and bullet holes everywhere. There was a stockpile of illegal machine guns on a shelf in the back. There was a large safe in Julia Ling's office with the door swinging open and $100 bills scattered on the floor. You didn't just roll up on a scene like that and release the only two witnesses. There were forms to be filled out, questions to be answered. Will had to give a statement. He'd had to wait while Amanda gave hers. It seemed like she had taken her time. He'd sat in the car, watching her talk to the detectives, feeling like an earthquake was going off in his chest. His cell phone had been in and out of his hand a dozen times. Should he call Sarah? Should he leave her alone? Did she need him? Wouldn't she call him if she did? He had to see her. If he saw her, he would know how to react, to do what she needed. He would wrap his arms around her. He would kiss her cheek, her neck, her mouth. He would make everything better. Or he would just stand there in the hallway like a jackass, molesting her hand. Amanda snapped her fingers for his attention. Will didn't look up, but she talked anyway.
Your emergency contact is Angela Pulaski, or should I say Angie Trent, I suppose, since she's your wife.
She paused for effect.
She is still your wife?
He shook his head. He had never wanted to punch a woman so badly in his life.
What did you expect me to do, Will?
He kept shaking his head.
So, I tell you that you're, I don't know, what is Dr. Linton to you these days? Mistress? Girlfriend? Pal? Is in trouble, and then what? We drop everything so you can go make googly eyes at her?
Will stood up. He wasn't going to do this. He would hitchhike back to Atlanta if he had to. She sighed like the world was against her.
The warden will be here any minute. I need you to pull up your big girl pants so I can prep you for your conversation with Roger Ling.
Will looked at her for the first time since they'd left the hospital.
Me? He asked for you specifically.
This was some kind of trick, but he couldn't see where it was going.
How does he even know my name? I imagine his sister filled him in.
As far as Will knew, Julia Ling was still on the run.
She called him at the prison?
She crossed her arms over her chest.
Roger Ling is in solitary confinement for hiding a razor blade in his rectum. He doesn't get phone calls. He doesn't get visitors.
Isolation had never deterred the prison message system. There were so many illegal cell phones inside the walls that last year during a statewide prisoner strike, the New York Times had been flooded with calls from inmates making their demands. Still, Will said, Roger Ling asked for me specifically.
Yes, Will. The request came through his lawyer. He asked for you specifically.
She allowed.
Of course. They called me first. No one knows who the hell you are except for Roger, apparently.
Will sat back down in the chair. He felt his jaw ratcheting tight. The silence wanted to come back. He could feel it like a shadow looming behind him.
She asked, "Who do you think the cop is who confronted Dr. Linton in the hospital?"
He shook his head. He didn't want to think about Sarah anymore. He felt sick every time he thought about what she'd been through today. Alone. Amanda repeated herself.
"Who do you think the cop is?"
Again, she snapped her fingers to get his attention. He looked up. He wanted to break her hand.
"This isn't about me. This is about Faith and getting back her mother. Now, who do you think the cop is?"
He cleared the glass out of his throat. "How do you know all of these people?"
"What people?"
"Hector Ortiz, Roger Ling, Julia Ling, Perry, the bodyguard who drives a Mercedes. Why are you on a first-name basis with all these people?" She was silent, obviously debating about whether or not to answer. Finally, she relented.
"You know I came up in the job with Evelyn. We were cadets together. We were partners before they got tired of us busting all their cases."
She shook her head at the memory.
"These are the bad guys who are on the other side. Drugs, rape, murder, assault, hostage negotiation, RICO cases, money laundering, they've been around as long as we have."
She added ruefully,
"Which is a very, very long time."
"You've worked cases against them?" There were 50 chairs in the room, but she sat down right beside him.
"Ignacio Ortiz and Roger Ling didn't just vault to the top. There are bodies they climbed over. Lots and lots of dead bodies. And the sad part is that they were human beings once. They were nice, normal people who went to church every Sunday and clocked into their jobs during the week."
Amanda shook her head again, and Will could tell that her words invoked memories she'd rather forget. Still, she told him,
"You know the word underbelly refers to the part of society that's never seen. But it also means the vulnerable part. The weak part. That's what monsters like Roger Ling and Ignacio Ortiz prey on. Addiction. Greed, poverty, desperation. Once these guys figured out how to exploit these people, they never looked back. They cut their teeth doing car hops for dealers when they were 12. They murdered before they were old enough to legally buy a drink in a bar. They've slit throats and beaten old women to death and done whatever it takes to get to the top and hold on to that power. So, when you ask me why I'm on a first-name basis with them, it's because I know them. I know who they are. I have stared into the darkness of their souls, but I guarantee you it doesn't go the other way. They don't have a damn idea who I am, and I've spent my career keeping it that way."
Will was finished, treading carefully. "They know Evelyn."
"Yes," Amanda allowed. "I think they do."
He sat back in his chair. It was a stunning admission. He didn't know how to respond. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, she didn't give him the chance. She clasped her hands together. Sharing time was over.
"Let's talk about this cop who confronted Sarah in the hospital."
Will was still trying to wrap his brain around what had just happened. For just a moment, he'd forgotten all about Sarah.
"Chuck Finn," she prompted.
Will leaned his head against the wall. The concrete block felt cold against his scalp.
"He used to be a cop. You don't lose that no matter how much heroin you shoot up. He's tall. He's probably lost a lot of weight from his habit. Sarah wouldn't have recognized him from his mugshot. I'm assuming he's a smoker. Most junkies are." "So, at the hospital, you think Chuck Finn discerned from Sarah that Marcellus Estevez might live, so he sent Franklin Heaney in to kill him? Don't you?"
Amanda wasn't quick with her response. He could tell what she'd said about Evelyn Mitchell still weighed heavily on her.
"I don't know what I think anymore, Will," and that's the God's honest truth.
She sounded tired. Her shoulders were slumped. There was a sort of detachment about her. He went back over their conversation, wondering what had finally made her admit that Evelyn Mitchell wasn't squeaky clean. He had never in his life seen Amanda give up on anything. Part of him felt sorry for her, and another part of him realized that he might not ever have this chance again. He struck while her defenses were down.
Why didn't they shoot you outside the warehouse?
I'm a deputy director with the GBI. That's a lot of heat.
They've already kidnapped a decorated police officer. They shot at you inside the warehouse. They killed Castillo. Why didn't they kill you?
I don't know, Will.
She rubbed her eyes with her fingers.
I think we must be caught in the middle of some kind of war.
Will stared at the meth project poster on the wall. A toothless woman with scabby skin stared back. He wondered if that was what the junkie had looked like. The woman who had told Sarah that there was a guy laid out by the dumpster. How long had it taken before Marcellus Estevez was dead and Franklin Heaney was struggling with Sarah on the floor, threatening to cut open her face with a scalpel? Minutes. Maybe 10 at the most. Will couldn't help it. He put his elbows on his knees and dropped his head in his hands.
You should have told me.
He could hear a distant voice in his head screaming at him to shut up, but he couldn't.
You had no right to keep that from me.
Amanda gave a heavy sigh.
Maybe I should have. Or maybe I was right to hold it back. If it's the first one, I'm sorry. If it's the second, then you can be mad at me later. I need you to talk this through with me. I need to figure out what is going on. If not for my sake, then for Faith's.
Her voice sounded as desperate as he felt. The day had utterly defeated her. Will couldn't help it. As much as he hated her right now, he couldn't be cruel. And somewhere in all of this, the click happened. He hadn't noticed it, but sometime during the last 10 minutes, his anger had started to seep out, so that now when he thought about it, when he considered what Amanda had done about Sarah, Will felt a festering anger rather than a burning hate. He took a deep breath and slowly let it go as he sat back up.
Okay, we have to assume that all the dead guys worked in Julia Ling's shop. Some of them on the books, some of them off, all of them doing both sides of her business. You think Ling Ling sent Ricardo Ortiz to Sweden to pick up some heroin?
No, I think Ricardo got ahead of himself. I think he got all the young guys worked up, thinking they could take over Ling Ling's business. He took it on himself to go to Sweden.
Will looked at his watch. It was almost 7 o'clock.
He was tortured, probably by Benny Chu.
Then why didn't they just cut the drugs out of him and be done with it?
Because he told them that he knew where they could get more money.
Evelyn.
It's what I said earlier.
He turned toward her. Chuck Fenn mentioned in one of his Healing Winds group sessions with Hironobu Kwan that his old boss was sitting on a pile of money. Cut to yesterday morning, Ricardo has a belly full of heroin and Benny Chu beating his ass. His friend, Hironobu Kwan, says he knows where they can get some cash to buy themselves out of the situation.
Will shrugged.
They go to Evelyn's. Benny Chu tags along to keep them from doing a runner. Only they can't find the money, and Evelyn won't give it up to them.
Perhaps they weren't expecting to find Hector Ortiz there. Ricardo would recognize his father's cousin.
Will wanted to ask what Hector Ortiz was doing at Evelyn's in the first place, but he didn't want to make Amanda lie to him right now. Ricardo Ortiz would know that killing Hector would bring some heat. He's already turned his back on his own father by smuggling in the heroin. Ling Ling is out for his blood because she's found out that Ricardo turned on her, too. Ricardo's gang can't find the money in Evelyn's house. She's not talking. Ricardo has to see at this point that his life isn't worth much. He's packed full of balloons he can't pass. He's been beaten nearly to death. Benny Chu's got a gun to his head.
Will ran through Faith's statement about her confrontation with Chu and Ortiz.
Ricardo's last word was, Almeja. That's what
Julia Ling called Evelyn, right? How would Ricardo know that?
I suppose if your theory holds that this all came from Chuck Finn, then that's where he got it.
Why would Evelyn's name be the last word on Ricardo's lips?
It's her street name. I'd be surprised if Ricardo knew her real one, she explained. It's not just the bangers who give themselves nicknames. You work narcotics long enough, they come up with something street to call you by. Sometimes that spills over into the squad. Hip and Hop were obviously shortened from their last names. Boyd Spivey was Sledge, as in Hammer. Chuck Finn was called Fish, I suppose because they couldn't remember the name for a lemming.
She smiled. Another private joke.
Roger Ling took credit for coming up with Almeja, which seemed curious at the time until we realized he doesn't speak a bit of his parents' language. Mandarin, in case you're curious.
What about you?
I don't work narcotics.
But they know you.
Wag,
she told him.
Short for Wagner.
Will didn't believe her.
Why did Roger Ling ask to speak with me?
She gave a startled laugh.
You can't really think that you're the only man in this prison right now who despises me.
There was a loud buzz and a clanging of gates opening and closing. Two guards came into the waiting room, followed by a younger man with Harry Potter spectacles and a floppy haircut to match. He was definitely not one of Amanda's old gals. There were velvet patches on the elbows of his corduroy jacket. His tie was made of a knit cotton. His shirt had a stain over the pocket. He smelled of pancakes.
Jimmy Kagan, he said, shaking their hands. I'm not sure what strings you pulled, Deputy Director, but this is the first time in my 6 years as warden here that I've been called back to work this late at night.
Amanda had easily transitioned back to her old self. It was like seeing an actor slip into character.
I appreciate your cooperation, Warden Kagan. We all have to do our part.
I didn't have much of a choice, Kagan admitted, indicating the guard should open the door into the main prison. He led them down a long hallway at a fast clip.
I'm not going to disrupt my entire system, no matter who you get on the phone. Agent Trent, you'll have to go back into the cells. Ling has been in solitary for the last week. You can talk to him through the slot in the door. I'm sure you know the type of person you're dealing with, but I'll tell you straight up, I wouldn't be in the same room with Roger Ling if you held a gun to my head. I'm actually terrified that's going to happen to me one day.
Amanda raised an eyebrow at Will.
You make it sound as if the primates are running the zoo.
Kaven gave her a look that said he thought she was either deluded or insane. He told Will,
at any given time in the U.S. penal system, at least half the inmate population have been diagnosed with some kind of mental illness.
Will nodded. He'd heard the statistic before. All the prisons in the country combined bought more Prozac than any other single institution.
Kagan said, some of them are worse than others. Ling is worse than the worst. He should be in a mental ward, locked down, throw away the key.
Another gate opened and closed. Kagan listed the rules.
Don't get close to the door. Don't think you're safe just because you're an arm's length away. This man is very resourceful, and he has a lot of time on his hands. The razor blade we found up his ass was wrapped in a hand-tied pouch, Ling, made from strings he pulled out of his bed sheets. It took him 2 months. He braided a yellow rebel star into it as some kind of joke.